Hello, this is Todd Durakon with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, March 2nd, 2021, coming to you from my home studio. We start on the front page, honoring Decatur native. Slain prison officer Lasco returns home for burial. This article is by Donette Beckett, Decatur. Luke Doteman waited patiently for the remains of his uncle, Lieutenant Eugene Lasco, to arrive at Graceland Cemetery. A lieutenant with Indiana Department of Corrections who was born in Decatur, Lasco, 57, died February 21st after being stabbed at Indiana State Prison, where he worked for nearly 12 years. The State Department of Corrections said he was assisting 22-year-old Sergeant Patrick Schmidt, who was wounded in the attack. "He went above what was expected," Doteman said, "but now we are bringing him home." A police escort accompanied Lasco from Michigan City, Indiana, to Graceland Cemetery in Decatur for burial, arriving at the site that included a large American flag hanging from a Decatur Fire Department ladder truck, waving in the wind, and even more flags lining the path that the procession followed to the site of the intimate ceremony attended by about 24 loved ones. He was laid to rest with other Lasco family members, including his mother, Hester Walker. Monday's ceremony followed a much larger remembrance of Lasco's life Sunday evening in Indiana that included family, friends, state dignitaries, and co-workers. "We feel he died as a hero," Doteman said. "He didn't have to do what he did." Brian W. Root, owner of Root Funeral Home, was responsible for the Indiana services and the transportation of Lasco to Decatur. "The escort to Central Illinois was a smooth transition," he said. "Everybody cooperated well in the two states," he said. "This is very hard for everybody, but everything went very well." Jim Ohl, deputy chief of the Decatur Fire Department, was contacted by the Illinois State Police to assist with honoring Lasco. "Anytime you have somebody that gives their life in the line of duty, it's a big deal," Ohl said. "Any support that people can come out and show to that person's family is greatly appreciated." The Decatur and Hickory Point fire departments provided assistance to the funeral procession by controlling traffic along Oakland Avenue in front of the cemetery entrance. "We're just out here to show our support for a fellow first responder," Ohl said. Local officers arrived in Indiana early Monday morning before the Lasco family started on their journey to Decatur. Sergeant Clayton Barrows with the Macon County Sheriff's Department was one of the escorts during the three-hour drive. "When I saw that he was from Decatur, it's just a no-brainer for me," Barrows said about his decision to volunteer to be part of the escort detail. "The service was a somber event, touching the heart of the officer. It can happen to anybody at any time," Barrows said. "It's a brotherhood. Although officers and first responders are often in harm's way, honoring anyone who falls in the line of duty is important," Barrows said. "If you can participate and be involved in laying them to rest, it's worth it," he said. The Macon County Sheriff's Department led the escort of Lasco's remains through the state. Four Illinois State Police motorcycles surrounded the hearse as it traveled to its final destination. According to previous reporting by the Times of Northwest Indiana, Lasco and Schmidt were in a common area about 2:30 p.m. February 21st when inmate Timitri Campbell, 38, attacked Schmidt and stabbed him multiple times, IDOC said. Lasco went to help Schmidt, and Campbell stabbed Lasco, officials said. Both Lasco and Schmidt were taken to Franciscan Health Hospital in Michigan City, where Lasco was pronounced dead. His death was ruled a homicide, LaPorte County Coroner Lynn Swanson said. Lasco's death is a reminder for many law enforcement officers of the dangers involved in their jobs. "There are some people that are still dangerous even when they are behind bars," said Decatur Police Chief Jim Getz. "I think this shows that, and at a time when we are enabling things because of police reform, we've still got to remember how dangerous some of these people are, and that's not just on the streets but also behind bars. Police officers are the last line of defense between the public and chaos, Getz said. I hate to make a political statement, but a correctional officer will be buried, and the lawmakers and legislatures and places like that won't really pay attention, he said. Getz said he feels for the Lasco family. He's going to work and thinking he's going to be home that night, and he's not, he said. It's sad. It's very, very sad. One group for which the tragedy hit particularly close to home was AFSCME Local 31, the union that represents prison correctional officers in Illinois. According to the Illinois Correctional Employee Memorial Association, 35 corrections officers have died in the line of duty. Spokesman Anders Lindahl said that in the last full fiscal year, July 2019 through June 2020, there were nearly 800 reported incidents in which Illinois prison staff were assaulted by inmates. Of these, more than 200 were classified as serious assaults and nearly 80 required medical attention. Our union advocates every day for policies and procedures that make the job as safe as possible for AFSCME members who work in corrections, Lindahl said. Lieutenant Lasco's tragic death is a stark reminder of the risks taken daily by the men and women who work behind prison walls to keep us safe, maintain order, and rehabilitate inmates. Some photos that accompany the article here: an Indiana Department of Corrections Honor Guard member holds the folded flag, which was draped over the casket of Lieutenant Eugene Lasco during a funeral service Monday at Graceland Cemetery in Decatur. Photo credits by Clay Jackson, Decatur Herald and Review. And another photo here. Indiana Department of Corrections Honor Guard members take part in the service for Lieutenant Eugene Lasco on Monday at Graceland Cemetery in Decatur. Lasco, 57, who was born in Decatur, died February 21st after being stabbed at Indiana State Prison. And this is a photo of the Honor Guard pallbearers wheeling the flag-draped casket for the service. Clay Jackson has the photo credit here. Moving on to Together Decatur, Taking the Plunge at Home, annual event to support Special Olympics goes virtual. This article's by Donette Beckett, Decatur. Who said you need a bunch of water to take a plunge? In a world dealing with COVID restrictions, snow, rain, and other water sources have proven to be viable alternatives to the annual polar plunge. The Special Olympics event, in which donors gather together for a dip in Lake Decatur, would normally take place on the first Saturday in March. However, with the lingering worries of COVID-19, polar plunge organizers have moved the event online and are asking participants to plunge at home. We've seen some really cool stuff, some inventive reasons to be freezing for a reason, said Vanessa L. Duncan, Special Olympics Illinois Region 1 Assistant Director of Development. Picture and videos show plunges involving water slides, dunk tanks, and cooler cakes. Chris Sider, sponsor for the Maroa Forsyth High School National Honor Society, partnered with the Maroa Fire Department to create their version of a sprinkler, allowing multiple members to run through a water arch. Nobody said they didn't want to do it, Sider said about the activity. They're just excited to do something. Approximately 65 students participated in shifts to allow for social distancing and other school activities. Students who were quarantined or chose to not to participate with the large group had the opportunity to do an at-home plunge. The students participated in the plunge on Saturday, February 27th, during an unseasonably warm winter day. But it's not about us, not about NHS. It's about a bigger purpose than this thing, Sider said. We are blessed with great kids here. Maroa Forsyth Jr., Meredith Bundy, was in the second group of plungers. It's nice to give back and help others. We have so much, she said. We are trying to do as much as we can just to help out. She said the water shooting through the fire hose was cold. It was fun, though, Meredith said, and we did it all together. Creativity is not a new element for the event. Costumes have become just as important to the plungers as the dip in the lake and are encouraged this year, too. Make your plunge personal this year, Duncan said. Other teams have already taken part in this year's event. St. Teresa High School's Chili Dogs have been devoted to the polar plunge for years. Heather McKay, teacher and polar plunge spokesperson at St. Teresa, began encouraging classes in November to raise funds for the event. The winning class was allowed to watch history teacher Tom Noonan sit in the dunk tank while the students who raised $100 threw balls at the target. Incentives included contributions from teachers and a $1,000 donation from an anonymous donor. That was to go to the higher donating students and get them to the 100 mark, McKay said. 25 students were given two balls each in an attempt to dunk their teacher. A lot of them were really close, McKay said, but the last student on the very last throw got him. The students were able to collect more than $2,500 for the event, but they continued to receive donations through other events, including Jeans for Quarters, which allowed students to wear jeans on a Friday. Last year, the Polar Plunge held on March 7th was a success. Shortly after that weekend, other social events were canceled because of COVID-19. We were fortunate, Duncan said. We had a great turnout. One of the highlights from last year's event was local winners of the state competition fundraising goal. Team Acorn, a group of plungers from Acorn Pharmaceuticals in Decatur, won the Illinois Corporate Challenge of 250 to 500 employees. Decatur's Team Bear also won the 1 to 249 employee category. Statewide, they both won corporate challenges and raised over $20,000 together, Duncan said. The Region 1 was able to raise $98,000 during the Polar Plunge 2020. During the past Polar Plunge events, the Decatur emergency personnel were available for safety measures such as scanning and preparing the water and providing health care if needed. We monitor all of those conditions very carefully, said Joni Keyes, Region 1 Director for Special Olympics. Organizers also provided volunteers to monitor the participants and heated tents for added safety. Since safety measures will not be available for this year's plunge at home, organizers do not recommend a jump in the lake. We do not encourage anybody using any body of water, especially without any sort of assistance, Keyes said, but we want them to have fun. For more than 20 years, Keyes has organized the Polar Plunge. It started out with about 10 people, she said, about the first years. We just lined them all up on the beach and we said, ready, set, go, and in they all went. The plungers then used the bathrooms of a nearby restaurant before and after their dip in Lake Decatur. The event grew over the years to nearly 500 participants, raising approximately $100,000 each year. According to Keyes, the challenge of jumping into a frigid lake is exciting to some. The bond the groups have is also a draw, with schools, corporations, and organizations often participating. It's a way for people to come together to give back to the community and to feel good about what they are doing and where their money is going, Keyes said. If they can run into frigid waters, they can do anything. The Polar Plunge is also an event that people love to watch. They're just supporting the plunger out there because they are a donor and want to see the person that they donated to get to freezing, Duncan said. Although Duncan admits she is disappointed groups will not be able to jump into Lake Decatur, she is looking forward to the creative ideas that will be seen coming from this year's Plunge at Home participants. Decatur is part of Region 1, along with Effingham, Mahomet, and Eastern Illinois University. Combining the areas made for better competitions for the Special Olympics athletes, according to Duncan. It's more of a competition because they are racing against more people, she said. The funds from Polar Plunge go toward the advancement of Special Olympics games and training, as well as insurance and equipment costs. Special Olympics hosts approximately 12 competitions a year, including swimming, track events, and weightlifting, and, of course, family fun events, Duncan said. The pandemic affected many of the athletes, according to Duncan. COVID brought on a whole new set of challenges, she said. How do we make sure that our athletes aren't going back into the shadows? Virtual sports and incentives have been introduced this year. Gaming systems have been purchased and given to the athletes. The hope is for Special Olympics to return to in-person meetings and competitions by mid-spring. The administration is studying the options available. With safety guidelines, the virtual opportunities to compete may continue well into the future, Duncan said. Whatever the format, McKay is confident her students will be ready and willing to do their part. To help the Special Olympics, it's a great vibe, McKay said. And some photos here. St. Teresa High School student Mia Winokur attempts to dunk teacher Tom Noonan as a reward for raising money at the 2021 Plunge at Home. And there's a sidebar here. Get involved to register for the local Region 1 Polar Plunge. Go to soill.org/polar-plunge/. Photo credit says submitted photo. And a group of National Honor Society members from Moroa Forsyth High School run under a stream of water produced by the local fire department. And there's a small rainbow that's produced here too from the mist. This article's by, or the photo's by Donette Beckett, Herald and Review. And the sidebar, Together Decatur, hashtag, hashtag Together Decatur. Do you know a person or of a story that exemplifies the best of Decatur? Well, if you do, contact Donette Beckett at 217-421-6983 or email at dbeckett@herald-review.com. Okay, we're moving on to find our next article here. We're on page A3, local and state. Council debate set, Herald and Review, Decatur. The Herald and Review is holding a virtual forum featuring candidates for Decatur City Council. The one-hour event, which will be streamed at herald-review.com, is at 5:30 p.m. on Wednesday, March 10th. Questions will come from Herald and Review journalists and readers, as well as the Decatur branch of the NAACP. Three council seats are on the April 6th ballot. The candidates are Ed Culp, David Horn, Jacob Jenkins, Chuck Cooley, Marty Watkins, and William Wetzel. Submit your questions to ccoates@herald-review.com. And there's a fun large photo here of a dog playing fetch. And the caption is called Fetch. Yvonne Sia takes advantage of the sunny weather to play catch with her one-year-old dog Finn on Monday at the dog park in Fairview Park. Finn is a Basset Hound, Australian Shepherd mix. Sia is from Chicago. It's a great picture of Finn chasing the ball, and the ball is over his head as he's looking to where the ball will land. Photo credit goes to Clay Jackson, Herald and Review. COVID testing. U of I test gets authorization. Lenore Sabota, Decatur. The University of Illinois system received a much-anticipated emergency use authorization from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration on Monday for its saliva-based COVID-19 test. Governor J.B. Pritzker is dedicating $20 million in funding from the Federal Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act to provide 1 million tests at the state's 12 public universities and 48 community colleges under an agreement between the U of I system and the Illinois Department of Public Health. Even as we lead large population states in vaccinations, widespread testing remains a critical tool in combating this pandemic, and I'm dedicating $20 million in CARES Act funding to provide 1 million tests to Illinois' other public universities under the FDA's emergency use authorization, Pritzker said in a statement. There has been interest in using the test known as COVID Shield by school systems, universities, and corporations because the process is less invasive than the nose swab method and results can be obtained within 24 hours. The Illinois Board of Higher Education devised a formula for allocating the 1 million tests. Labs at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur and Loyola Medical Center in Maywood were the first in the Shield Illinois network to become operational. In addition to those two labs, the network includes labs in Normal, Springfield, Rockford, Itasca, and Wooddale. The latter three are not yet fully operational, but expect to be soon. The Shield Lab at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital has been operating since December as a lab-developed test prior to the Emergency Use Application, EUA, and fully compliant with the Clinical Laboratory Improvement Amendments, CLIA. Tina McCoy Dial, Director of Laboratory Services at St. Mary's, said in an email. The lab at St. Mary's has routinely run between 2,000 and 3,000 tests per day from 17 different institutions, including Northern Illinois University, Eastern Illinois University, Loyola University Chicago, Rivian, and ADM. We expect that volume to increase as the program continues to grow, she said. The U of I developed its test in 2020 and had administered more than 1.5 million tests at its Urbana-Champaign, Chicago, and Springfield campuses. The quick turnaround time provided by the test has been credited with being able to hold down spread of the coronavirus through early detection and isolation. The U of I has two units working to share the test, Shield Illinois, which is focused on expansion within the state, and Shield T3, a university-related organization working with entities outside the state. Photo here, lab manager Dawn Barding works in the Decatur facility for testing for the University of Illinois Shield COVID testing program at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital. Photo credit goes to Clay Jackson, Herald and Review. Dollar General opens new store in Decatur, Valerie Wells, Decatur. A new Dollar General store has opened at 251 North 22nd Street in Decatur in the former Family Video location. The former video store sites have proven to be popular locations for the discount stores. A similar renovation was undertaken recently in Mattoon. The store's hours are 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. The site was also home to a Dottie's gaming parlor. Signs posted at an empty storefront near the Pizza Hut at the nearby Pines Shopping Center indicate the business will be relocating there. All right. We are looking for the next article here. We're on the money page. Page A5, U.S. manufacturing expands most in 3 years as prices climb. Vince Galli, Bloomberg News. U.S. manufacturing expanded in February at the fastest pace in 3 years, and a gauge of materials costs accelerated the most since 2008 as supply shortages challenged the industry. A gauge of factory activity increased to 60.8 from 58.7 a month earlier, according to Institute for Supply Management data released Monday. Readings above 50 indicate expansion, and the figure exceeded the 58.9 median estimate in a Bloomberg survey of economists. At a time when household and business demand is off to a solid start to the year, amid lean inventories, producers are struggling with rising costs for raw materials, labor force disruptions, and higher shipping rates. The ISM's measure of prices paid for inputs climbed nearly 4 points in February to 86, the highest since July 2008. Orders, production, and factory employment measures all expanded at faster paces last month, highlighting robust and resilient manufacturing that's helping power the economy. At the same time, a measure of unfilled orders surged to the highest level of nearly 17 years, while another gauge showed delivery times were the second longest since 1979. Labor market difficulties at panelist companies and their suppliers continued to restrict manufacturing economy expansion and will remain the primary headwind to production growth until employment levels and factory operations can return to normal across the entire supply chain, Timothy Fiore, chair of ISM's Manufacturing Business Survey Committee, said in a statement. The group's gauge of order backlogs advanced to 64 last month, the highest since April 2004, and its index of supplier deliveries jumped almost 4 points to 72. Shortages of semiconductors have idled production at some auto plants. The disruption in supplies is largely tied to the pandemic, as more people began working from home, spurring sharp increases in demand for electronics and computers. All right, looking for our next article here. We're on the Life page, page A7. It's the Dr. Keith Roach article where he answers questions. Patient may not recognize symptoms of Crohn's. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 77-year-old man in good health. I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease about 15 years ago, but had no symptoms. Recently, I had a colonoscopy after blood was found in my stool. A biopsy confirmed Crohn's disease, and a follow-up CT scan showed a stricture in the terminal ileum. My doctor prescribed Humira, but I am concerned about the possible side effects. With no symptoms, I wonder whether I really need it. Signed, GLS. The answer from Dr. Roach: management of Crohn's disease is complicated, and there is no substitute for experienced clinical judgment. So I asked my colleague, Dr. Sunanda Kane, at the Mayo Clinic. She advised me that many people who say they have no symptoms subconsciously change their diet or other habits based on early satiety, bloating, or a sense of fullness. Dr. Kane noted also that strictures can be due to inflammation or fibrosis. If the stricture they found was inflammatory, she says, Humira is a good therapy, and the risk is worth the benefits. If this is a fibrostenotic stricture, then we recommend a low-residue diet and monitoring for complications like anemia or vitamin deficiencies. A dedicated CT enterography can discern between an inflammatory and fibrostenotic stricture. Some people have an element of both, and Humira is good for the inflammation portion. In this area of COVID worry, we try to stay away from steroids and absolutely want to treat active inflammation, as this appears to be a risk factor for contracting COVID and more complicated infection. Dr. Roach writes, a recent column of the MMR vaccine misstated the conclusions of a paper. The lead author of this paper noted that while the currently available COVID-19 vaccines offer the best protection right now, an MMR vaccine for people over 40 may provide some protection against COVID-19 at very low risk and cost. Further studies are ongoing to explore whether the strategy might reduce COVID-19 infections or severity, particularly since the specific COVID-19 vaccines may not be available to everyone for months or even years. Well, that brings us to the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, March 2, 2021. We'll take a break now and return with the second half hour. Please join us when we return.